Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're covering Season 3, Episode 3, Chaos at the Earth's Core. This episode continues the tour through the far-flung corners of the DCU with a stop-off in Skartaris as we enter the lost world of the Warlord. Joining us in this adventure at the center of the Earth is someone who recently guested on Shag's JLI Bwahaha podcast and helped him cover a JLI-centric issue of Justice League Unlimited comic. I knew from that episode he knew his DCAU, so we had to have him on this show. Please welcome JT the Exterminator.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having me. This is exciting.
So you've been listening to the show. So it's you said it was kind of surreal that we're in your we're communicating now. That's one of those surreal things with podcasts. I know. So
I've been having you guys on my phone as I'm driving around to my jobs, and now I'm actually talking to you in person. So I'm very weirded out right now, but in a good way.
I will warn you, I felt the same way when I first talked to Rob Kelly all those years ago. it's you know, the first taste is free, and then next thing you know, you've got your own show and and no life. So
if I could do it, I would love to podcast, but I just know myself, and I'll get to the point of having an episode out there, and then my life will take over and I won't be able to get to episode 2. So maybe when I retire.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, you're a great podcast guest, so we're glad to have you here. So
thank you. This is fun.
So we got to start out with your history with the DCAU. So what's your origin story with the Timverse?
So I was exactly the perfect age to be there when it started. When Batman the Animated Series dropped, I was 9 years old. So that was the perfect point to hit me right where I needed it to. Obsessed with that cartoon, and it turned into being obsessed with DC at the time. I kind of grew up knowing pretty much Marvel. I have an older brother. That was all he collected. So I kind of knew that stuff. Of course, you know, Marvel cartoons were also kind of coming out around the same time, but Batman the Animated Series just stood out from all of that. I mean, it was just so unique and different. Obviously, you know, we to this day has such a strong fan following for a reason. Never expecting it to turn into what it did all the way up to what we see now with Justice League Unlimited. I mean, a roster of 60 different superheroes. If my 9-year-old self knew that was happening, my goodness. I collected Batman Adventures, the comic, tie-in comic, right from issue 2 onward. I missed issue 1, and I wrote in to the comic. Scott Peterson, I believe, was the editor at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember this plain as day. I wrote to them just saying, you know, love the comic, love the show. Missed issue 1, but I hope to order it someday. And a few weeks later, I got a big envelope with the DC Comics letterhead. I open it up. Issue 1 of Batman Adventures is on there, or in there. And there's just a little note from a DC Comics notepad that said, "Josh, enjoy Scott." And the dude sent me issue 1.
That's so awesome. Wow. Please tell me you kept that note and everything.
Well, I did. Unfortunately, got hit with water in my basement. So I have the letterhead, but the ink washed away from that. I still have the letter, the envelope. Of course, still have the comic. That's always been part of my collection. I did reach out to him, actually, again, in this world we live in now where, you know, all the social media and all that fun stuff. I found him on Facebook. And I told him that story. He didn't really remember it, but he was just thrilled to know that, you know, it like solidified my love of comics and collecting all these years later. But again, I was probably, when that happened, I was probably 10. I mean, again, just that perfect magical time as a kid where it's like, you know, wow, you know, that happened, you know, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. I love that. And it kind of goes against what we've always heard. Like, I know, like, people used to write into Bob Rosakis, the answer man, and say, can you send me a copy of Swamp Thing number 8? Sorry, we don't keep copies here of all of our comics, you know. So in that case, they did, and they sent you one. That's so cool.
I wasn't asking for it. I just simply said I had missed it. But I guess I don't know what I wrote in my original letter, but he must have thought, wow, all right, I'm going to make this kid's, you know, day with this, you know. It was cool, man. It was really, really, I'll never forget that story. I'll forget what my wife tells me, you know, 10 minutes after she says it, but I'll never forget that story.
Oh, so typical man.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Love you.
So did you follow all the animated series along, and do you have a favorite series?
Yeah, I followed them all, you know, started, of course, as I grew up, you know, started hitting the working world. You know, around, you know, I was delivering papers at 14. And then, but I started to miss things like, I watched Superman, I watched New Batman Adventures. I was still in high school when those were flip flopping every other week or, every day on, during the weekday. But then, Batman Beyond was a little spotty when I was younger, although I did watch it. I collected that comic, the tie-in comic. But it was when Justice League came out, where it was spotty when I would catch it, because I was fully working there. I think I was working two jobs at that point. But then when the DVDs came out, I just absolutely devoured them. And I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever. collect. And it was funny because every time they had a show, I'm like, okay, where's the Adventures title? You know, when was that going to drop? So, you know, I don't know how many people did, but apparently Batman Adventures 12 became, you know, the big, huge key book that it is now. Mm-hmm. I remember buying it on the stands and I was hesitant, you know, actually it wasn't the stands, it was the spinner rack. I was hesitant to buy it as a kid, 'cause I'm like, oh, Batgirl, I want Batman. but I was like, no, I better buy it because, you know, it's part of the collection. And I kind of got out of collecting for a little bit. You know, I was more just buying trades here and there. And I remember going to a local show and, you know, the guys have all their keys behind them and everything. And I saw Batman Adventures 12 and I was like, what, why is that back there? And he goes, oh, it's first comic book appearance of Harley Quinn. I was like, oh, you don't say, how much is it going for? And it was like $300 he had it for, which maybe was a little expensive at the time. And I was like, well, I'm never touching that again. So I do have the Batman Adventures trades. So, you know, I can still read the comic, but yeah, I won't be touching that one anymore.
The same thing happened to me. I had no clue that book was worth anything. And I went to a comic show and it was back with like golden and silver age key comics, like you're saying. And I asked the exact same question, because to my mind, Harley Quinn's first comic appearance was in the whole Batman No Man's Land storyline.
Right. And yeah. Like the traditional continuity stuff. I figured that would be what they'd consider, not the animated stuff.
But it makes sense. That's actual her first appearance in a comic. Yep. And I do have that one. And I've not sold it yet. I have been tempted a couple times when things have been a little tight, but I have not done it yet. So, you know. But,
well, our daughter goes to college in 2 years.
That's right. There you go.
Well, I kind of filled in the rest of my tie-in comic collections, because they did that Batman Adventures Volume 2, which ran for a bit, but every time Harley Quinn has a cover appearance in those tie-in books, I realized those were always my gaps in my collection. I'm like, oh, that's why I'm not finding them. Mm-hmm. So over the, I don't know, maybe last 6-7 years, I kind of just finished off, got everything else that I needed for that. I think all I'm missing is the original Mad Love special, which eventually, again, I'll pick it up at some point in my life. But I'm a genuine fan of all those comics. I always thought those were, I liked the done in one style, you know, back then when everything was crossover craziness and you couldn't pick up anything off the stands without buying, you know, 17 more things. Plus at that age, you know, Image hit when I was a kid, and that's pretty much when I discovered Kirby and Ditko and all that, because I could not get on board with all that stuff. I did not like that style at all.
Good man.
So I was one of the few of my generation that, you know, wasn't obsessed with, oh my God, Deadpool's the coolest thing ever. I'm still not a Deadpool fan, and I just really prefer all the old stuff. So,
oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, it's kind of funny because I bought the Batman Adventures for the longest time, and I bought the whole complete original run. But then when they changed mm-hmm. the Batman and Robin Adventures, yep, I bought yep. that for a while. But I kind of, because the other comics were eating up so much of my money, I'm like, okay, I've got to keep up with the continuity and all this and that. And now I really wish I hadn't. So I need to go back and do what you've done and buy, fill in all the gaps I've got, because I care a lot more. Obviously, I'm doing a podcast about it. I care a lot more about the animated sure. universe than I do about, you know, whatever continuity DC's thrown out the window this week, you know.
Well, that's the key right there, is, you know, the constant rebooting and figuring things out and doing things different. It's interesting, but as a fan, you're kind of like, well, maybe this stuff doesn't matter as much anymore, or maybe that's just how I kind of take it. I'll definitely be interested if you got a creative team on there that I like. You know, Mark Waid's The World's Finest, that's probably the only title currently I'm digging. It's the mm-hmm. only one that I really pick up, but I tend to follow Mark Waid. You know, he have quite a bit of his stuff, because I tend to like him as a writer. But yeah, it's kind of 80s and backwards is kind of what my collection is. And I guess I'll find out if my little guy is going to carry on in my footsteps, or, you know, he sells it all off. I have no idea, but it's here for him if he ends up getting into this stuff, which he probably isn't going to have a choice the way it's going.
That's right. You gotta raise them right. Yeah.
Well, we've been watching, because I'll watch Justice League Unlimited now with him, and you know, he's not really paying attention to story yet, but he is naming off all these characters. He has told us repeatedly that for Easter he wants a Red Tornado action figure, and he's not only is he 2.5, but I mean, how many adults nowadays even know who that character is? So I think that's hysterical. So yeah, I bought some loose JLU figures off of eBay.
You better make that happen, Daddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got a Red Tornado ready to go. He's already got my Green Arrow and my Green Lantern and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. He loves Martian Manhunter and Red Tornado. I'm like, good. This is good.
That's people, awesome.
Yeah. Most people, you know, don't know those characters really. So.
Yeah, and you're in luck, because Mego just came out with a Red Tornado figure, so you could always get a Mego.
I'll see.
Yeah.
maybe this will be his big character. You know, as he grows up, he just always have a fondness for Red Tornado of all characters.
Hey, he might grow up and write the definitive Red Tornado series. Yeah. You never know, right? Yeah. So.
Well, he needs one, so yeah.
That's right. So who's your favorite leaguer on the Justice League?
Oh, boy. Well, if we're looking at... I've always had a soft spot for Green Arrow, for Ollie. Absolutely one of my all-time favorites. I really, really love Ted Kord, Blue Beetle. He's kind of always been my guy. I do like, you know, Blue and Gold. I love Booster Gold. The JLI stuff was definitely part of my growing up, for sure. Yeah, those two. I mean, of course, Batman. You know, everybody loves Batman. But well, except Shag or whatever he says. Right. You know, yeah. you have a Batman phase. Whatever he talks about. You know.
Yeah.
But
well,
but
we
yeah,
all know not to listen to him.
Yeah. Blue Beetle and Green Arrow, for sure. Those are the two. And Green Arrow is I definitely love, you know, Satellite era Green Arrow, for sure. That's my top one. And then I did really dig the Mike Grell series, which, you know, what was it, 60 issues, I think, and then mm-hmm. a few spinoffs. I really loved that. I thought that, I know it was like stripped down and, you know, a little darker and all that, but it played like an 80s action adventure TV series. Like it so could have been made like a MacGyver or an A-Team type of feel, I think. But
yeah.
It never did.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I guess the Arrow series was a little close to that when it first started, maybe, and then it got a little more superhero-y. But yeah, that's true. Speaking of which, that's a good segue from Mike Grell to Mike Grell. Do you have any particular yes. connection to Warlord?
So Warlord for me is something I remember passing in bargain bins back when Bargain Bids had comics from, you know, before the 2000s. I don't know if you've rifled through any now, but it's just all 2000 stuff. And I would always be like, who would ever buy this? And that was like me for years on that. And then it got to the point where I was like, gee, I could get an entire run of Warlord for 25 cents an issue. So then I just started kind of snagging them. And I think I'm like 7 issues away from having the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
At this point. And I do have a first issue special, his first appearance. I have a beat up copy. And then I did get a nicer copy just to have. I read the first, I think, about 30 issues. And then that's when I was missing a couple. So, and I just never got back to it. But I'll tell you, that was, I don't know if you have you read it?
I've just read it here and there, just spotty.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I haven't read the whole thing. I haven't read like the later stuff, but early on, I mean, it really felt like I've told people it's like the greatest 80s sword and sorcery movie that was never made. And it just has that vibe in it. You know, you watch Beastmaster or Krull or all that, you know, just awesome schlock from that decade. And it's perfect for that. And you know, I don't know what James Gunn's doing, but everything's always got to be this big, big conjoined universe. And I doubt they'd ever do a Warlord movie. But man, if they do, they should make it in that vibe, you know, do it with the cheesy special effects and make it feel like it's out of the 80s.
Oh, that'd be cool. I'd be down for that. Yeah, that's good.
It is good, though. I do want to get back to it because I was definitely enjoying that series for sure.
Well, this is another good segue, so we should do a Watchtower Files on Warlord.
Okay, let's see that.
Okay.
Watchtower Files.
So Warlord began as a newspaper strip concept writer and artist Mike Grell created called The Savage Empire. After a successful period working at DC Comics on Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes and other titles, Grell revised the concept and pitched it to DC as Warlord.
DC gave Warlord a tryout in issue number 8 of their first issue special series, November 1975, but apparently an ongoing series, which began with a cover date of January-February 1976, was already a foregone conclusion. DC was searching for a sword and sorcery hit to compete against Marvel's Conan.
U.S. Air Force pilot Travis Morgan is shot down over the North Pole following a spy mission to Russia. He enters a strange world of Skartaris, existing in the center of the Earth, and encounters dinosaurs, sorcerers, and lost remnants of the civilization of Atlantis.
Grell was inspired by his love of Hal Foster's Prince Valiant strip, Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan and Pellucidar series.
The Warlord series was abruptly canceled after its second issue, but several months later was revived with issue number 3, October-November 76, by incoming DC publisher Jeanette Collin.
Grell gave Morgan allies such as his future wife Tara, Princess of Shambhala, his daughter Jennifer, who became a sorceress, his son Joshua, also known as Tinder, Makiste, Shakira, no, not that one, her hips do lie, the werecat Mariah, a Russian scientist who stumbled onto Skartaris, and Mykola Rostov, a werewolf and Mariah's lover.
Their primary foe in the early days of the series was the sorcerer Deimos, who was high priest of Skartaris.
Grell wrote and drew the series for the first 53 issues before handing first the art chores, then the writing to others. The series lasted 133 issues, ending in winter 1988, and it was only toward the end that it was dragged into the larger DC universe.
Grell wrote a 6-issue follow-up miniseries published in 1992. A new ongoing was launched in 2006 by writer Bruce Jones and artist Bart Sears that lasted for 10 issues. Grell returned to the series as writer and artist for a 16-issue run from 2009 to 2010. In this series, Travis Morgan dies and is succeeded by his son Joshua, a.k.a. Tinder, as Warlord.
Warlord has a legacy for toy fans who never read the comics. In 1982, Remco launched a Lost World of the Warlord action figure series, heavily inspired by Mattel's mega-popular Masters of the Universe line. Morgan, Makiste, Mykola, and Deimos were joined by other DC fantasy characters Hercules and Arrak, Son of Thunder. Remco also sold a concurrent line, Warrior Beast, in conjunction with Warlord, but there was no involvement from DC in that line.
DC Direct released a Warlord figure based on the short-lived Bart Sears redesign in their first appearance series in 2007. Mattel issued a JLU Fan Collection 3-pack based on this very episode featuring Morgan, Deimos, and Supergirl in 2009.
And I don't have that set. Huh. That's some figures I don't have. And because JT is like, he is like an exemplary guest, and he volunteered to do homework. He volunteered this. He has done his own Watchtower file segment on our lead villain of this piece. So do you want to tell us about him?
Watchtower files.
Yes, I will. So we're talking Metallo. Obviously, you know, he's had a long history in the comics, but I will be talking DCAU version of Metallo, which most of his appearances were Superman, the animated series. I'll kind of run through this fairly quickly so we don't take up a bunch of time. But right from the very beginning, Last Son of Krypton, the three-parter, he was in part two and part three as John Corbin. This was before he became Metallo, but they had already brought him in. He was kind of working with the Kasnian terrorist stuff to steal the Lexo suit. The big final battle there was Superman fighting the giant robot. But from there, we got The Way of All Flesh, which was the origin of Metallo. It was all from, of course, Lex Luthor and him kind of manipulating Corbin. Not to give things away, although I imagine anybody listening to this probably has seen Superman, the animated series. From there, he shows up again in Superman in a episode called Action Figures, where he was basically walking the sea floor for about a year. And finally shows up again with amnesia and completely just basically just the robot body version of himself. That was the one on the volcano with the kids. He gets his memory back, fights Superman once again, and it ends with him solidified in cooled off lava. One of my favorite episodes, actually. I thought it was kind of creepy how they handled Metallo in that one. Mm-hmm. Comes back in Heavy Metal, which is also the first appearance of Steel, not Commander Steel, but John Henry Irons in the DCAU, where it's revealed that Inner Gang chipped him out of the stone and kind of upgraded him. He had kryptonite laser vision in as part of one of his upgrades there. I bring that up because we don't see that in this episode, but we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. That one's pretty much every time he's defeated, they cut his kryptonite heart out, and in this case Steel's hammer smashed it. So after that, we see him again, and apparently from what I've gathered is everybody hates this episode of Superman's Pale, the Jimmy Olsen episode where he gets the signal watch. Mm-hmm. Do you hate this episode?
I don't think there's an episode of Superman the animated series I hate at all. I've heard people rag on that one, but I think people just hate Jimmy for some reason. I love Jimmy Olsen. I don't get it.
Don't get it either, because I actually like this episode a lot, and I like the this one had Metallo has a girlfriend named Tina, and she's got all sorts of piercings, which was kind of interesting for a late 90s cartoon to showcase some of that. But he was hanging out in a scrapyard in Metropolis and was using Jimmy as a to trap Superman there, and that one ended once again with his heart falling out when Jimmy threw battery acid on it. Mm-hmm. So that was the last we saw of him in Superman, the animated series. He shows up again in Justice League season 2, Hereafter part 1. And just the beginning part there with the, I don't think they ever named him this, but kind of the Superman Revenge Squad.
Mm-hmm.
He's with Livewire, Toyman, Weather Wizard, and Kalibak. Their plot was to kill Superman, and we actually see him kind of fight Martian Manhunter briefly, and then I just watched this. He got basically thrown out of the fight with Flash using Wonder Woman's lasso, and they kind of like slingshotted him halfway across Metropolis, and we didn't see him again in the rest of that. And then the last time you guys just covered I Am Legion in Justice League Unlimited season 3, he's just a background character, although he was admiring KG Beast's arm gun briefly in a scene. And that brings us to this.
Nice. Well, thank you for that. That's great. I actually forgot about a couple of those that I, you know, because when you said you were going to do it, I'm like, oh, good, I don't have to. Yeah. So,
well, it's funny because it's like, well, I have this exam that I'm studying for like my pest control thing, but I was like, oh, I got to watch Superman, so I guess I better do this. You know, Chris is counting on me here. So,
oh, jeez. Well, don't do your real homework. Yeah, because I don't want your wife coming after me. You know,
no, so. we're good.
Okay,
I watch this stuff anyway, so I just had to make some notes. But yeah, it was kind of fun tracking where Mattel's gone. I think he was one of the best villains. I think he's one of my favorites in general because I really like. The kind of redesign, what was it? Probably John Byrne, right? Redesigned the idea of Mattel for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he looks a lot like that you know, that kind of Terminator version of Mattel. And the Superman animated series figure of Mattel from Kenner Hasbro is really cool. I love the way it's got a little button that like kind of makes the kryptonite heart kind of pump in and out. Like
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool. It's one of the better figures in that line. It's a really sweet. It's a really nice. Sweet figure, yeah. And you brought up Hereafter, which is, you know, his last appearance. Although I think in that one, I think Corey Burton is subbing for Malcolm McDowell, who we get back in this one. But
yeah, it's not Malcolm McDowell. And I got it. I mean, his voice is just so good, especially the menace that he exhibits, especially in this episode. Obviously, we'll talk about so good.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's Malcolm McDowell. The man was. You know, one of my favorite movies is he's not playing a villain. And we'll get into that, but he was born to play a villain, basically. And I think he's probably typecast, but you know, but he is so so great. And I always kind of wondered if Bruce Timm wasn't going for his name's Corbin, but he kind of physically looked like actor James Coburn when he first showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wonder if Bruce Timm wasn't being because he liked the cast. Actors he liked and you know the designs he did, so I wonder if that was part of it. Yeah, so and you can see James Coburn being Metallo, so I mean it would totally work because he's was always cool, you know. So
well, and I like when they do these villains for the DCAU, especially because when they bring it in as well, he's this guy first before he becomes the supervillain. With the way that they handled on BTAS Harvey Dent. You know, we got some episodes with him before his fall into Two-Face.
Yeah.
And just seeing that, because John Corbin was already clearly not a great person, and he was menacing just as John Corbin, especially towards Lois Lane and stuff in those early episodes. So I love the progression. And the DCAU, the thing they do so well is also the movement of time. And I think Batman Beyond really helps that because here we have we're dealing with a universe that actually has like, hey, here's the official future rather than playing with, well, it's a potential future. And I think they've leaned into that perfectly because you get characters with story arcs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. That end point in mind kind of does kind of solidify a continuity in a lot of ways. Yeah, I like that. That's a good point. Well, let's jump into this episode, shall we?
Okay.
Chaos at the Earth's Core originally was titled Heart of Stone, apparently. Originally aired September 24th, 2005, written by Matt Wayne, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, with music by Lolita Ritmanis. In the cast, we had Nicole Tom as Supergirl and Shakira, Phil Lamar as Green Lantern, Stripe, and McKeast, Giselle Lauren as Stargirl, Paul Guilfoyle as Travis Morgan, Malcolm McDowell as Mattello, Douglas Cunning as Deimos, Kim May Guest as Silver Banshee and Jennifer Morgan, and Nicholas Guest as the Dino Trooper.
The Justice League attempts to stop a rampaging turtle monster from destroying Tokyo. Green Lantern and Stripe lead him into a trap, but Stargirl jumps the gun and nearly botches the whole operation. Luckily, Supergirl arrives and helps make the plan go through. Stargirl is visibly jealous of her more popular and apparently perfect teammate, especially when she learns there is a Supergirl convention in town. The Maid of Might's fans aren't too happy with Courtney's openly hostile opinion of Supergirl, and she gets a kick in the shin for it.
On the flight back home, their javelin is pulled downward over the North Pole into a fissure in the ice and a strange portal beneath.
They emerge in a jungle setting, and the cockpit separates as both halves of the ship crash. Despite Green Lantern's ring telling them they are still at the North Pole, they see a red sun above them. They are then attacked by lizard men riding dinosaurs, and Supergirl finds the red sun has zapped her powers by at least half. Stargirl gloats about this as the League fights back. Air reinforcements arrive on Pterodactyl, and Stargirl relishes in having Supergirl beg to save her. The Leaguers manage to defeat the lizard men, but are surprised by an angry T-Rex. But before they can react, it is shot down by gunfire, courtesy of Travis Morgan, Warlord of Shambhala.
Morgan's sorceress daughter Jennifer brought the Leaguers to their world of Skartaris because they are in need of champions. Their enemy, the wizard Deimos, and his hordes of dino troopers have recently moved past attempting to overthrow kingdoms to full world conquest with new high-tech weapons. Morgan is training the last free people to stop Deimos on his quest to take possession of the Great Stone, secured in a tabernacle by monks who believe it has mystic properties.
At his camp, Deimos vaporizes the leader of his dino troopers, but not before he draws a crude representation of the coat of arms he saw on one of the heroes. Metallo and Silver Banshee step out of the shadows, familiar with Supergirl's S-Shield. Meanwhile, Morgan takes the Leaguers to the Great Stone, where his ally McKeast tells them of how it once healed him, but it also has properties which can kill as well as cure. The monks open the door to reveal that the Great Stone is a huge meteor of kryptonite. Supergirl collapses, and the doors are quickly shut. Morgan's ally Shakira arrives to warn them that Deimos and his army are fast approaching outside.
Morgan orders his army to attack, and the League joins the battle, even the powerless, but certainly not helpless, Supergirl. Morgan's army and the League hold their own despite the arrival of Silver Banshee, using her scream to wither several of Morgan's warriors before Green Lantern puts a gag on her. Deimos makes it through the mountain, into the tabernacle, and the Great Stone. Stargirl blasts him before he can open it, however. She is captured and then knocked out by Metallo as Morgan arrives for his final showdown with Deimos. Supergirl stops Metallo from opening the Great Stone Vault, and the two engage in battle. Deimos lunges at Morgan and goes careening off the mountain into the abyss below. After a protracted battle, Supergirl uses her brain to remove Metallo's kryptonite heart with a dagger, and Stargirl arrives with an assist, flinging it far away from the weakened Girl of Steel.
Before his people, Morgan declares the stone safe, Deimos defeated, and Skartaris free. Green Lantern questions Metallo, who is reluctant to divulge why he and Silver Banshee were in Skartaris and after the giant kryptonite stone. But Green Lantern persuades him by making him fear the last bit of reserve power he had was fading without his kryptonite battery. When he starts to talk, he is electrified and goes comatose. Green Lantern plans to take Metallo with him and the stone, but Supergirl offers Skartaris is the one place the deadly rock is doing some good. Green Lantern agrees, but only if they can seal the portal up for good. Morgan has no problem with this, since he has everything he needs there, including his wife Tara and daughter Jennifer. Green Lantern seals the portal and the Leaguers head home with the inert Metallo in tow, the mystery of his involvement still lingering.
So we start off with Tokyo being ravaged by a giant turtle, and you would assume this is just a nod to the classic kaiju film Gamera, 19 from 1965, but he's got a tuft of red hair, which means it's also a riff on somebody that we were just talking about,
yep.
Jimmy Olsen and his infamous transformation into the giant turtle man / turtle boy, originally from Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, number 53. June 1961. So before Gamera. So what do you guys think of that?
I really wish that when the turtle was shrinking, you would have seen like it split from Jimmy Olsen. And then we could have seen, you know, Superman, the animated series, Jimmy again. And it would have been.
The same thing.
Did you?
Yes,
yes I did.
Yeah.
It would have been great. And then, you know, everybody who likes the DCU would be like, oh, cool, it's Jimmy. And then everybody who's old school and knows the whole Turtle Man thing would be like, oh my God, they really made sure that's what this was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't go for that, but then they probably would have had to, you know, like Supergirl could have talked to Jimmy because she, you know, she knew Jimmy well. That's, you know, him and her and Jimmy bust up the Granny Goodness's thing in her first episode.
Yep.
So,
yep,
yeah.
Yep. That would have been great. And then you could have seen them two interact. Yeah. It would have been cool.
Yeah. Oh, well, missed opportunity.
Yeah.
We see Stripe setting up the trap for the turtle, and Pat here has a new, much smaller armor than previous seasons after Cadmus destroyed it. Phil Lamar continues to voice Pat, so he's often talking to himself in this episode.
Phil Lamar, man, what a tour de force that guy is.
Oh, he is. He's the Frank Welker of the DCAU. I mean, even though Frank Welker did work a little in the DCAU, he is the Frank Welker of the DCAU.
It's amazing how and he legit sounds so different. I mean, that guy is talented. And I loved him from Mad TV. I never expected him to have all this other talent too.
Oh, I know, when he was like the UPS guy that was like so jittery. Yeah, yeah. I still remember that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. So what did you think of his new armor, Cindy?
It makes more sense. It's easier to move. I mean, he can actually get in the jet and it's not a problem.
Right.
Know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
As far as transportation, it just makes more sense.
Yeah. What about you, JT?
Yeah, I'm probably going to end up talking about it more, but I love Stars and Stripes, the comic, and this redesign of Stripes' armor. When I saw it first on the cartoon, because I don't know, did it ever end up looking like this in the comics first, or was it on here first?
I can't that remember it got which redesigned came first. I can't remember. Yeah.
But I just thought it, you know, kind of a patriotic Iron Man looking armor, and I love the old one because it kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, Frankenstein Jr., the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Which, you know, I like as well. But just seeing him with his helmet off and things like that, and then. Yeah, like you guys said, you know, being able to be in the jet, Cindy was saying, that makes a lot more sense. But all the cool stuff that he does, which I'll kind of go over later, it's the coolest thing ever.
yeah, it's really cool. Yeah,
They let him shine in this episode with at least what does this armor do other than just fly around, and it's so interesting.
Yeah, he gets quite a bit of a spotlight here, which I like, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. And we get our first speaking role for Stargirl, voiced by Giselle Lauren, as I said. She is known mostly for voiceover work, subbing for Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy the Vampire Slayer on several video game projects. She also voiced Margaret Connors on Spider-Man the Animated Series. That's the wife of Kirk Connors, a.k.a. The Lizard. So speaking of lizards, I guess it's not quite a lizard, but anyway. The turtle monster breathes fire and is able to project jet-like fire from the holes in his shell and fly just like Gamora does. So I thought that was kind of a neat touch. It kind of looks like one of those fireworks that you light and it spins around and goes up in the air. That's what it reminds me of. I will say, though, I forgot how bratty Stargirl is in this episode.
I know. And I think part of that is because, you know, with the TV series, which, you know, it was ended up being on for what, 3 seasons?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But you think about how she was portrayed on that, and then you revisit this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to smack her upside her head. You little snot.
I liked their back and forth in this, like how she's clearly, you know, jealous of Supergirl and that. But what's interesting is Supergirl knows that, and she plays into it as well. Almost like she's just digging, you know, digging the heel a little bit into Stargirl. Because when, you know, as the episode progresses, you know, you can kind of see that it's not a secret that there's, you know, not a lot of love lost at that time anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I mean, you know, Stargirl, like, she attacks the turtle without Green Lantern. She caused a lot of destruction in the process. I mean, he's knocking over buildings. Then she jumps the gun and attempts to blast the turtle down to the ship below full of gas canisters and misses.
Very, very rookie-esque her portrayal here. And it's funny because now Supergirl is more the seasoned vet, at least, you know, her progression since initiation anyway.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And, you know, she arrives and pushes the monster down onto the boat, and the gas is released, changing him into a regular sized turtle, unfortunately, not Jimmy. But but as you know, most importantly, Supergirl is sporting a new look. It's much more classic than her previous DCAU appearance and looks to be a combo between her 80s, 90s look inspired by her Helen Slater movie costume and the then current version created by Michael Turner for Superman, Batman in 2004, which just had a blue skirt, back to the blue skirt, but had the midriff top. So what do we think? Which costume do you prefer for DCAU Supergirl, Cindy?
Oh, definitely this one.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Hands down.
You didn't like the t-shirt look with the
combat boot? It looked put together.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it looked like, oh, this will, I'm going to go in my closet. I'm going to get this. This will work.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it was. So I guess it makes sense.
But, you know.
Yeah. What about you, JT?
Yeah. I definitely agree with Cindy on all that. Yeah. I think it fits too for the time when that, when Supergirl first came out, it was, you know, what, 97, 98, you know, that kind of hit that little moment in pop culture probably with the look for younger girls. But yeah, it, she looks like she's stepped into her own now as a, even though she just is wearing even more, looks more like Superman's uniform, but still it's, she's obviously exuding lots of confidence now, and you know, she knows how to fly the javelin now and stuff. So like, it makes sense that they almost like matured her a little bit, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it seems like, even though, like you said, it's more of a Superman look, she's ready to fully embrace her legacy as bearer of the S-Shield, and because she's comfortable enough in her own identity to be proud of her cousin's brand, you know. So I like that. And apparently this change is new, as the cosplaying fangirls and all the artwork at the convention that they stopped at, they're still dressed in her white t-shirt look.
I call BS.
Yep.
Why's that?
Because if you, any girl that is following her, they'd have went back home and been like, okay, we got to get this together. We got to get it right.
You're not wrong, because anytime a character changes in the comics, or it, like if a new trailer drops, like I guarantee you, the minute those photos leaked of Hugh Jackman in his Wolverine suit, there were cosplayers at the next convention with that exact same suit.
Exactly.
Or a version of it.
And the fact that all of the ads and all that stuff still had the old suit, no.
Maybe she just literally showed up in it today.
If that was the case, though, they should have had a throwaway line that said that.
Oh, well, they reacted to it?
Yes. That's true. Where they didn't, it seemed like it was, you know, established. Yeah. And if it was enough to be established, it's enough that everybody should have been, or at least half of them should have had the new suit.
You're right. Yeah.
Because somebody, one of the girls would be like, oh my God, she's got a new costume.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, there should have been a throwaway line like that to establish that. But where they didn't, and where every single one of them had the old one and all the advertising, BS.
What do you think of
they could have done that line too. That would have been that and the Jimmy Olsen thing. Missed easy opportunities here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So what did you guys think of the Supergirl convention? She has a convention in Japan.
I love that. I thought that was
me
cool.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I like that we're seeing how people react to these superheroes and how they become part of their lives. They certainly don't take to Stargirl throwing off on her. She gets a kick in the shin, and the fan tells her Supergirl can melt her with her eyes. I love that.
What I really loved about the fact that there was a Supergirl convention was when they're back on the javelin, Pat Dugan is holding a Supergirl flag and has like a Supergirl book. Hilarious. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. And GL just looks and says, she's very big in Japan.
Yeah. Yep.
Supergirl is like the Taylor Swift of superheroes.
Yeah.
And she even kind of looks like her in this with her new hairdo. I mean, she kind of does. Like,
what would you call them? Because Taylor Swift's are Swifties. Were these Soupies?
Soupies, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
And in that flight back, when Pat's got the, you know, his little pennant and his Supergirl book, Stargirl's laying it on thick. You know, she's griping to Pat about how Supergirl is always going on about her cousin, and we never hear her say anything like that. So do you think she actually did it, or is Courtney so jealous of Supergirl she wants to chalk up her popularity to just pure nepotism?
Oh, I think she's just sour grapes. Boogerhead. So
I was gonna say the exact same thing, Cindy. I was gonna say sour grapes boogerhead. I had it written down.
Can you tell I work in a school and I'm used to censoring myself?
Boogerhead.
Yep.
She's a cotton headed nitty muggins.
There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe she shouldn't talk smack about someone with super hearing, and that's something we never think about. You couldn't be catty around Super Bowl, could you?
No, I wouldn't advise it.
Well, and then there's there's Jean who can read your thoughts. Like, you better always be thinking, you know, clean thoughts around that guy.
Oh, yeah. That's true, too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Then their javelin is pulled downward despite Supergirl assuring them it's not her. Then they get pulled into a hole in the ice and through a portal and out into a jungle, and they separate the cockpit from the rest of the ship. So this reminds me of the Enterprise D in Star Trek Generations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we find out later that they did salvage the saucer section.
Yes, they did. That was a 20-year payoff.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah. Both Stargirl and Supergirl try to call the Watchtower at the same time, and Supergirl refers to herself as Kara, and Stripe yelled out to Courtney earlier, so secret identities are just not a concern for these folks.
No, they don't care.
Yeah, they just don't care, and we probably just need to quit commenting on it.
Yeah, like, no, yep. I just...
just playing fast.
I made a note about that, because again, I've been listening to you guys, and with initiation, the whole debate there about, you know, Jon Stewart yelling out Kara and that, it's like, well, now she's just saying it herself. So, you know, who knows what happened between episodes? You know, maybe she just told everybody who she was. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just the whole Clark Kent thing. That's the only thing, because she is
right
in this continuity, Clark Kent's cousin. So she says she's Supergirl. You know,
yeah, I mean,
it's going to get kind of tricky for him to say he's not Superman. So,
it's really, you got to think about Ma and Pa Kent, really.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. GL's ring says they're at the North Pole, but Stripe points to the red sun above them. And this is a problem as Reptile Men riding dinosaurs appear and attack. Supergirl is at half strength. When she tells her teammates this, Stargirl's response is, aw, I mean, wow.
I know. I'm like, you would rather yourself be in danger and therefore be, you know, because Supergirl's at half strength. You know,
yeah, I mean, it's like if I have Superman or Supergirl on my team, I want them at full power.
Uh-huh. You know, yes, exactly.
Especially when you're dumped into like another
unknown,
unknown dimension. So like we said, it's partially because we've gotten used to Breck Bassinger on the Stargirl series. Did you ever watch that series? JT?
I did, actually. You know, my wife teased me about it, but I was a trooper and I watched all three seasons. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
Me too.
I did too. We really liked
it. And our daughter absolutely, you know, she loved it. That was her thing.
Yeah,
so
she really enjoyed that.
They were really clever how they, you know, did a lot of JSA stuff, villains, that type of thing, without it feeling too bogged down or heavy with that stuff. It was cool how it was there, but it really was a Stargirl show. I thought they did a good job, a good balance.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Well, and we always played Spot the Pump.
Oh, yeah, because...
See, Breck Basinger is a type 1 like our daughter is, and so we always tried to find where she had her pump in her costume.
Yeah, her, yeah.
No. Her outfits and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So one of the velociraptor-like steeds bites Stripe's head, and I'm going to let you go on about this, JT, because I'm pretty sure you probably have something to say about it.
Yeah, the fact that we get to see just a guy in a big robot suit fight dinosaurs is, we probably all did that with our toys when we were like 6 anyway, playing in a sandbox. Mm-hmm. So it's just pure joy watching Stripe just do his thing. All the different stuff that, you know, he's got that the electrified defense that he did. He hits his S on his armor and it like does that force field of electricity. Not evil. Nope. And they did he had like that auto fire from his fingertips, the scanner vision that he does when he kind of looks over everything. And I don't know if it was, I think it was a little later when he has the rocket fists.
Yeah.
It's yes.
All of these things are all so much fun. I love that they took the time to look. He's not just an Iron Man, you know, clone or whatever you want to call it. Like, I feel like he's his own guy, his own armor and everything. I don't know. That was cool. It was fun.
Yeah, I like the fist. It reminds me of the old Shogun Warriors toys. You know, yeah. They shoot the fists off. Yeah, it's cool. Then pterodactyl riding reinforcements arrive and GL tells Stargirl to cover Supergirl, and she flies in front of her, not doing anything, while these lizard men fire laser blasts at her, and Supergirl asks her to zap her with her star thingy, And Stargirl responds,
"Oh, Maya, because it would be such an honor to help the great Supergirl out of a jam." I mean, what a boogerhead.
Yeah. Oh, man, she's I mean, when I rewatched this, I'm just like, wow, I remember they had a thing, you know. But and like you said, Supergirl knows what's going on here too. She's not oblivious. You are so loving this, you know.
I'm sure, because you know, you would, you know, that you have somebody that you're working with and probably doesn't like you very much. It's like, well, you know what, I'm gonna do that thing he doesn't like me doing when I'm around him, because it's just, I know it's gonna piss him off, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've had other missions where that's happened.
Yeah. And I mean, Supergirl, you know, in the first episode of JLU Initiation, she's shown to be pretty brash and headstrong and snarky. I mean, you know, with Captain Atom and everything. But
I don't. And here's a callback. You know, she stuck her tongue out at Captain Atom. She stuck her tongue out at Green Lantern in this one, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
When she was flying the Javelin.
Yeah. But I don't.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and about the whole about the flying the Javelin thing, too. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Supergirl was ever this level of bratty kid playing superhero that Courtney is here. So
it'll be interesting to rewatch Patriot Act when we kind of see these characters again, because obviously, you know, that's still coming up a little bit in this season. But I don't remember her characterization, and maybe I didn't, because these are obviously deep dives into these episodes. So I kind of want to watch that to see how Courtney is in that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she kind of tones things down after this one, if I remember right, which is, it's good.
Yeah.
she grows a little bit, which is good. I mean, I'm glad if she does, and I'm pretty sure she does. I'm glad they don't just revert her back. Like, you know, a lot of TV shows are really bad about that. Not just animated, but live action. Like, characters learn nothing, you know? Yeah. I mean,
as
the CW Flash series aggravated the living crap out of me, because the characters would, they revert back to, they'd learn a lesson and revert back to the way they were by the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
It was so aggravating. It's like, oh my God.
It's like the mom from the Goldbergs.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yes. That's the absolute worst example, but yeah, you're right. So Green Lantern creates a pterodactyl of his own with his ring, which is nice. He makes a lot of cool ring constructs in this episode. So they're finally, you know, even though last episode he said it's a really good bubble, but he's doing more than bubbles. I think it's funny you said, you know, Stripe uses scanner, and Stripe says scan the area, then proceeds to do so. So why would he say that way? It makes me wonder if Phil LaMarr was supposed to say that as Green Lantern, and they just left it in because he used the wrong voice.
Geez, I don't know if I caught that.
Because it sounds like Pat is giving himself an order. If he said, I'll scan the area, that would work fine.
Right.
But he's like, scan the area. And then he like turns his head around with his fingers up on the little button on the side of his ear, where his ear is supposed to be, you know. It's like,
I'll have to watch that part again.
Yeah. Pat Scan picks up another adversary, a huge T-Rex who emerges from the bushes ready to feast. But he's taken down by gunfire. And then we get a nice intro to our special guest star for this episode, Travis Morgan, the Warlord. So what do y'all think of that intro, Cindy?
I mean, I'm sorry. I can't.
You can't? You're not into Warlord?
No.
Okay. Okay.
I'm trying to be nice. I was hoping you weren't going to ask me.
Okay. Okay. Well, JT, what'd you think about it?
Again, for what it is, very much a, you know, it's almost like the DCAU He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I'm all about it, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know if they really mention it here, but man, I really think the comics, I thought it had two sons in Skartaris. And as a result, it's hotter there because everyone is scantily clad in the comic. Now, you don't need an explanation for that particular genre because that's just what they did. You know, Frank Frazetta painting of Sword and Sorcery, that's what it is. But I'm pretty sure they gave it an explanation that it's just super hot down there. So, you know, running around in a loincloth or whatever is kind of standard, I guess. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
But yeah, don't, I could be wrong on that. So I guess we'll find out when people say, wow, that JT doesn't know anything.
You know more than I do. So yeah. I thought they interpreted his classic design really well, though, within the Tim style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's got the helmet.
Yep.
Which is more to say than what Chris Hemsworth never wears as Thor. So.
Right. He's got the big shoulder, whatever that skull thing is. And yep. Yeah, looks good. Yeah. Loincloth. And I noticed like his loincloth doesn't cover anything on the side. In the anime, I was like, wow, he's showing a lot of, you know, and then Tara later.
Oh my gosh, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, we'll get there. All right, I'll get there. Yeah.
Jiminy Crickets.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
I think Travis I'm remembering Morgan. Why I like the comic. I got to get back to it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Travis Morgan, the Warlord, is voiced by actor Peter Guilfoyle, and I might have pronounced his name like two or three different ways, so I apologize. Best known for his 20-plus year stint as Jim Brass on CSI and its various spinoffs. He is a highly in-demand character actor, appearing in movies like L.A. Confidential, Air Force One, Don't Look Up, and series like The Good Fight and The Morning Show. If you see his picture, you're like, oh, yeah, he's that guy. So you'll know him when you see him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Back at Morgan's Fortress, we meet his wife, Tara, who strangely never speaks in this episode. And his daughter, Jennifer, who reveals she brought the Leaguers there because their world of Skartaris needs champions. Kim May Guest provides the voice of both Jennifer Morgan and later Silver Banshee. She does a lot of voice work in video games like the World of Warcraft series and also appeared as Jinx in G.I. Joe Renegades and Katana in Batman the Brave and the Bold. And she will return to JLU as Linda Park, who we all know is Wally West's lady.
Woman.
Yep.
Very nice.
Yes. Stargirl isn't impressed with Morgan's ragtag army, but he's quick to point out most of these folks have lost everything to Deimos. So, you know, feel free to dump on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good line.
It is a good line. Yeah, it is.
Yep.
A good one. when she tries to explain herself, Supergirl steps in and says,
she means we'll do everything we can to help.
Which makes Courtney love her that much more.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Ooh, the tension. Morgan tells them the wizard Deimos is the master of the dino troopers they met, and he recently upgraded from trying to overthrow kingdoms to conquering the whole world, now with laser guns. Mm. Like you said, it's like He-Man. It's, yep. You know, it's technology, yep. And sorcery and all that type of stuff. So
everything had to get a little Star Wars boost back then. So
yeah.
Yep, you're right. That's right. Morgan knows someone is supplying them, and he mentions his time in the Air Force when that energy stuff was science fiction. Green Lantern says that's why a barbarian is carrying an auto mag, and Morgan confirms he came through the portal and made myself at home. This has to be the quickest origin recap in any comic adaptation ever.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
Through portal, here I am.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, this season just trip hammers through different DC locales and books that are superhero adjacent. So, you know, they don't have a lot of time to, you know, they dump you into the world and say, here's what you need to know. Let's move on. You know, so.
Well, and I think that makes it that much more fun because, again, for somebody like me who never touched a Warlord comic, then you watch this episode and you're like, all right, that's kind of interesting. I think maybe I'll check that out. They jump around and check out different things all the time. Like you know, coming up, you got a Viking Prince that's going to be showcased a little bit. And I'll tell you, I wish DC would do a collection of those because ever since I saw that episode, I would like to read those original stories.
Oh yeah, I'd love to see. I've just read a few over the years and. You know, the Joe Kubert art alone is worth.
Oh yeah,
there should be an omnibus, you know, or
yep.
However,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't know if there's enough stories, but you know, there definitely something. Should a hardcover, yeah,
yeah,
trade paperback.
Put it together somehow, yeah, for sure. And you know, that DC that's one of the things I think DC is better at than Marvel is the fact that they have so much, like you said, superhero adjacent type properties. And a lot of it never gets touched because, of course, superheroes are the thing. But that was such a cool thing with this show. And they did it with some of their other episodes of, you know, regular Justice League as well. But, oh, man, what a cool, how else would you ever see Warlord in animation? And they did it, and they probably would have kept going if they got another season. Yeah. Would have been cool. You know, maybe we would have gotten to some other crazy stuff like Atomic Knights, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Claw the Unconquered or something. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. I love how, while they're having this discussion, Green Lantern and Travis Morgan, Supergirl is trying to lift large boulders in the background and struggling, mm-hmm. but it really shows that, you know, Kara's unwavering perseverance, which we have discussed several times on this show, you know, which I really love. And we'll, of course, see that in momentarily in this episode. So
mm-hmm.
Morgan says the people they see training are the last free people in Skartaris, caught between Deimos and the Great Stone. And Morgan explains the Great Stone is kept in a tabernacle by monks who believe it has magical properties. And, of course, Deimos wants it, or he thinks he wants it. We later learned that Deimos doesn't really care about it, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting. We cut to Deimos' camp, and his head dino trooper reports in, voiced by Nicholas Guest, who has done voice work here and there in the DCAU before and will voice Martian Manhunter on Batman the Brave and the Bold. But it'll always be Todd of Todd and Margo and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation to me. I don't know Margo. I don't know Deimos. You know.
Oh, Lord.
I am on board with you there. My wife and I have Christmas sweaters that say those two phrases as well.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Why is the floor all wet, Todd? I don't know, Margo. Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's awesome. Deimos is voiced by Douglas Dunning, who seems to do mostly small independent work. His IMDb is really kind of nebulous, but apparently he was cast because he can do a mean Christopher Lee impression, as Deimos sounds and looks like the legendary heavy and my personal favorite Count Dracula.
And he's even drawn to look like Christopher Lee.
Yes. Yes. He looks like they cast Christopher Lee as Deimos.
Could have swore it was too. I never knew it wasn't until recently, you know, rewatching it and everything for this. I always just assumed it was Christopher Lee.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this guy, I don't know why they didn't get this guy to do Count Dooku's voice on all the Clone Wars stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, because he sounds just like he does a really good Christopher Lee. And I mean, this is from a Hammer guy, you know. I mean, he's got him down, yeah. And there's no denying here that Deimos straight up immolates this dino trooper.
Oh, he gone bye-bye.
Oh, yep. Man, it's yikes. Yep. I'm really surprised they got away with that level of, I mean, you see him start to disintegrate. They show like light coming out of that tent and his scream. And then when you come back, there's a burned circle.
Scorched
earth, you know. It's like,
maybe the sensors were like,
pussycat, you have fried lizard.
Yeah. Nice.
The sensors were probably like, okay, someone's dying here. Is it a person? It's like, well, it's a dinosaur person. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of like a robot, right? So that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, go for it.
There's a nebulous line there.
Yeah. Before he was vaporized, he drew a very crude S shield, and Deimos asks his advisor if they are familiar with it. And out from the shadows walks Metallo and Silver Banshee.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Metallo is very familiar with that, as he says. And as we pointed out, Malcolm McDowell returns from Superman, the animated series, to voice Metallo once more. And, you know, and he didn't show up for Hereafter in Justice League. Of course, Malcolm McDowell is, of course, best known for A Clockwork Orange and killing Captain Kirk in Star Trek Generations. My favorite role of his, though, was H.G. Wells in Time After Time.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. So
I will throw out there my two things that I know him the most from, aside from this voice work, is he is Ari's boss on Entourage.
Okay.
And he's phenomenal on that. And he was in the new Dr. Loomis in the Rob Zombie Halloween movies.
Right. That's right.
I'm not usually a reboot guy, but I actually thought those were pretty well done, and he was perfectly cast for that, I thought.
Yeah, I have never watched those, but when they cast him, I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good, he's kind of a Donald Pleasance type, you know, because
exactly,
Donald Pleasance
yeah.
almost always played a villain otherwise, so yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
I thought that was good.
Yeah, yeah. And he played a version of Mr. Rourke on, like, one of the Fantasy Island reboots, right? But 10, 15 years ago or something? Yeah, I think the previous reboot. So we're picking up with the Legion of Doom thread from the season opener, and we didn't get any of that in season in episode two with the Hawkman story. So, yeah, Morgan takes the Leaguers to the Tabernacle, and we meet McKeest. Geo puts his hand out to shake it, but then sees he has a mace for his hand. Where's Shiera when you need her? I will say I had one Warlord figure as a kid. I had McKeest, and I got it at the school Christmas party. You know, one of those exchange things, you know. And I thought it was cool because at the time, they were all the He-Man characters were Caucasian.
Yeah.
They came out with, what was his name, Clamp Champ, after I got out of it.
Okay.
But so I thought, oh, cool. Yeah, I have a black He-Man character.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought that was cool because I didn't have a lot of black. I had a lot of black G.I. Joe characters.
Right.
But I didn't have any black He-Man characters. So I thought that was cool that I actually diversified my toy, you know, collection a little bit. And he fit right in with them. So it was cool. He didn't have mace hand. He didn't have the weird things around his head either. So,
oh, but I like the weird things.
I know he didn't have it. So
Okay. I was going to say, it was funny because during my time of passing by all the Warlords and be like, why would anybody read this? And I would see those ads for the Remco toys in the old comics. I'd be like, why would they make toys of that? And then now I'm at the point where it's like, I think it'd be cool to get a couple of those.
Yeah, I would pick up the Travis Morgan if I see him at a decent price, or any of them really, but they're pretty pricey. There's actually a lot of people who like to collect those, and you know, there's a lot of He-Man collectors into them, and they didn't make nearly as many of those as they did the He-Man figures.
Sure. And yeah, if I could find a Warlord, like an actual Travis Morgan one, I would snag that. I'm not a big toy guy, although I do get the JLU figures. And of course, I'm saying, well, it's for the kid, but they're for me, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I finally get to use that as an excuse.
There you go. Yeah, it's usually if you find Warlord, his wings on the side of his helmet are missing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a common thing. So yeah, if you find one intact for a good price, buy it. Yeah,
just snag it. All right. Good to know.
Yep. Phil LaMarr is once again talking to himself as McKeest when Green Lantern talks to him. The doors open to reveal the Great Stone is a huge chunk of kryptonite.
Uh-huh.
Kara collapses. Green Lantern covers her with his ring bubble, and Stripe shuts the doors. Even Stargirl is actually concerned. Well, I'll give her that. She's concerned. So she's growing a little bit. We're seeing some growth here.
Uh-huh.
But now Kara says something that I call into question. If this place wasn't messing with my powers, I'd be dead already. So red solar energy, or lack of yellow sun energy, makes her less susceptible to kryptonite. How does that make any sense? Her physiology is still the same.
However, comma.
Okay.
Like, for instance, on Smallville, when they did the Green Arrow and they visited the Smallville universe, and John Cryer tries to take out Tom Welling with kryptonite. He's like, it doesn't do anything to me anymore.
Oh, good point. Yes, good point. Because he gave his powers up.
Yep.
So he assumed,
wouldn't it be the same?
He exposed himself to gold kryptonite. We have to assume, I guess.
Right, but yeah. I mean, wouldn't this kind of be? I mean, I know that he wasn't exposed to gold kryptonite. I mean, she's not being exposed to gold kryptonite, but
her powers are taken away.
Yeah.
Or okay. Okay. What about you, JT? What do you think?
Well, let me throw another wrinkle into all this.
Okay.
So in the Superman the Animated Series Supergirl appearances, which I think ultimately she was in 4 or 5 episodes, they never showcased her with kryptonite. There was really no interactions between her and kryptonite, as far as I remember, in Superman the Animated Series. And then the first time we see her affected by kryptonite, I believe, is in the JLU The Return, when her and Steel are flying through that tunnel and there's the little chunks of kryptonite. What is interesting here is in the Superman Adventures tie-in comic, they make it a point. Now, again, I know the show and the comic creators, they didn't really necessarily talk or were on the same page all the time, but they make it a point where she says that because she's from Argo, she's not affected by kryptonite. And that happened a couple of times in the Superman Adventures comics with Supergirl, that because she's from Argo, kryptonite, either it doesn't affect her or it does not hit her as hard as it would someone from Krypton.
Okay.
So again, that's not, maybe that's not official continuity with the DCAU, but like I said, it really wasn't until JLU where they're like making her that susceptible to kryptonite. So there might be some headcanon here that has to be employed to let this make sense.
I do think, I think I could be wrong, but I'm thinking in Legacy when Superman's turned rogue.
I was like, here's that they use a kryptonite missile. Oh no,
laser.
They use when they put her in surgery.
Oh, that's how
right. They had to use
a kryptonite laser
to work on her. But she gets, she gets hit by a kryptonite missile.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
So I think they established that's the very last episode of Superman, the animated series. I think they did establish there. So the comics had went off on their own path already, I guess, before they established that. So I think that, and again, I am going back and watched it, but I do like Cindy's, like she brought up the Tom Welling thing on the Crisis crossover.
Yes, on the Arrowverse.
Yeah, the Arrowverse thing. Yeah, yeah.
So if their powers are gone, or if they're not, you know, super charged up with the regular solar, then the kryptonite, like, so same thing theoretically could happen to Superman then in the DCAU. Yeah.
So if Superman, like if somebody tried to pull kryptonite on Superman in Hereafter when he's in the future with the red sun,
right?
Yep. It apparently wouldn't have hurt him or not hurt him as much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
So, okay. Well, I guess that's a new rule. So I will bring up something about kryptonite later though, that I don't think we can quite defend. So we'll get there at the end. So,
okay.
Shakira walks in as a cat and then transforms wounded and weak. And she tells him, Demos is here. It's the end. That's a great outlook, Shakira.
Oh, yeah.
You know, real positive. now, Shakira is infamous for her fur bikini. And in her classic Who's Who entry, well, let's just say it looked like maybe she just didn't groom too well.
Christopher Dean!
Wow. All right. I didn't know this was the show we were doing.
I'm sorry. It come up on Who's Who, and everybody talked about that. We've all thought that. It's like, because Mike Grell drew these just little straps that, like, you can barely see, and you're like, oh, my God, what am I looking at?
Yep.
You know? So, but I noticed there's a lot of suggestive Warlord covers with her.
And
it almost looks like her and Morgan have a thing going on, even though he's married to Tara. Am I reading things wrong, you know, or is it just because Mike Grell liked to draw sexy women?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I think that was, again, part of the genre there. And, I do remember some of the covers of which you speak.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's one in particular I saw where she's just, like, literally bent over. And, like, he's in front of her. And, like, she's, like, the thing your eye goes to immediately is the fact that she's just, like, bending over with her butt and her fur bikini. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's really hot down there.
So. Yeah, right. So,
but she's wearing fur.
She's wearing fur.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's move on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It come up. It's just what
it didn't come up. You wrote it down.
It come up on Who's Who. I'm trying to. It's on the network.
Christopher.
I'm trying to get those Who's Who numbers. You know, for downloads. Anyway. The opening of the big battle scene gives me very Lord of the Rings vibes. Very much so, which I think, you know, of course, why wouldn't it? I mean, obviously those movies were still fairly new when this came out too. So I love that Green Lantern tells Supergirl to stay back and she just yells and jumps off the fortress wall with the sword.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't bother arguing with him or anything else. She's,
And she's pretty proficient with the sword.
Yeah.
Which that leads me again. I headcanon a lot of stuff with DCAU because we never see every single thing, you know, what happens between episodes. I feel like Wonder Woman must have taken her to Themyscira and she got some training.
Yeah. Like in the Jeff Loeb, Michael Turner storyline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that makes the most sense. Or she's just hanging out with Shining Knight, you know, up there in the commissary. And he's like, hey, let's do some sword stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. I like either one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she is more battle proficient at this point in her career than mm-hmm. Superboy/Superman was in his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he relied more on his innate strength. And you can tell she's actually using strategy and battle knowledge.
Well, you got to figure too, Kara.
And I mean, I'm not saying that as a diss on Superman. Nobody come for me.
No.
I'm just saying, you know.
Well, Kara, like Spinner, like, you know, how many years in a sleep pod, and she watched her planet, you know, get destroyed and all this and that. So she's tougher, you know, than innately tougher than she's been through more stuff. And I mean, you know, I know that, like, you know, Tom King took her to her like a darker place when, because it's Tom King and that's what he does. But, you know, that's apparently the basis of the Supergirl movie. Yay. Which I really don't want that to be.
I have no knowledge of that series. They made her darker as well, huh?
Yeah, I know Dr. Ange isn't a fan of it. And if Dr. Ange isn't a fan of it and it's about Supergirl, then it's got to be right. Wrong. Yeah, so.
There you go.
Yeah. It works for me.
Yeah, so, yeah. But anyway, but we love this Supergirl. So I was too old for the Tyco toy line Dino Riders in the late 80s, but I remember it, and the dinos with cannons look quite a bit like them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what it reminds me of. So
I have two Dino Riders in my house because my brother-in-law gave them to my son. So,
aww.
Yep.
Nice.
I know those as well.
That's cool. I think they had an animated series that was like part of that Marvel action universe with like RoboCop and reruns of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So,
yeah. I at least remember the advertisement for that in comics. I don't know if I ever saw an episode.
Me neither. I think it probably aired like at 4 a.m. or something on Saturdays in this market. So this battle is pretty brutal. I mean, Tara slices some orc-like beast, knocks one down, and clearly stabs one with the body off screen. Like just sticks her sword in it like, you know, just like, wow.
It's got to be that Themyscira training. I mean, they were all warriors over there. So that's got to be what that is.
Yeah, right.
Well, but this is Tara.
Oh, this is Tara, not Kara.
Oh, it's Tara doing it? Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's good. Is she Tara or Tara? I'm going with Tara, but maybe she's Tara. I don't know. There's been a lot of controversy over the way we pronounce names on the network lately, so I don't know how you pronounce her name because nobody ever says it in this episode.
Right.
So I just can go by what they're, you know, we're doing our best here, people. It's all, like Rob said, it's all made up, you know, so... we get a brief second with Mariah using a gun on the hordes. There's no explanation for her outfit and strange yellow eye makeup. There's no time. So, but you know, if you're
I do like, think about this. I mean, yes, there's not very many women on the battlefield, but the women that are on the battlefield kick some serious booty.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Mike Grell was always very, you know, progressive with showing like strong women in his comics and stuff too.
You're saying I appreciate it.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he's always been very good at that. Yeah,
in his Green Arrow series as well with not only Black Canary. I mean, there was some issues, I suppose, with that, but he got her going on that, and then Shadow he created, and she kicked butt too.
Right, that's right. Yeah, yeah. The sandworms from Beetlejuice show up.
It was funny. I mean, we were watching it and I was like, oh, that looks like the worm critters from Beetlejuice. He's like, oh my gosh. He said, I wrote the same thing down.
Yeah.
See, and even though they look like that, I wanted to interject a where's Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward when you need them joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Tremors.
Oh, I do too. Yeah. I kind of thought that too. Yeah. The just let it run into a big like rock wall somewhere or something, you know. Just... I got you, you son of a. No, sorry. Jennifer Morgan creates a giant flaming bat demon that immolates them. Lots of immolation in this episode. Mm-hmm. Just her giant bat demon reminds me of something, and I can't think quite what it is. It's kind of Chernabog from Dinobald Mountain, but it looks like something else too, and I can't. I guess it kind of looks like the Phoenix.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's like the Jean Grey Phoenix Force.
Phoenix Force.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then Silver Banshee uses her sonic scream on a guy who looks a bit like He-Man and turns him into a withered husk. Ugh. Again, yep. Brutal.
Yep.
What did you guys think about that, how they animated that?
I mean, it looked like she killed him.
I know. It's like, woo.
Yeah. So you're probably going to get to this later, but Silver Banshee, was that also a John Byrne thing? Or yes. Was she before that?
Yeah, she, I'm just getting to that, actually. So
okay.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, because I seem to remember reading that, but I don't remember it really at all, what her abilities were. Seeing how she, it's definitely creepy. I appreciate the creepy because, you know, you got to have some shock value like that if you're a villain, especially.
Yeah. And I mean, it fits in. If she fits, I mean, she could have just been a character from Skartaris doing this too, you know, sure. Which kind of works. She was actually in the background in I Am Legion as well with the Legion of Doom. But this is her first full appearance here. And she was created by John Byrne for Action Comics number 595. December 1987, and that was actually that's when Action was a team-up book, and it said Superman in question mark, and you saw that it looked like she killed Superman on the cover, and then his ghost was coming through the wall, and I think the gimmick there was that she could kill somebody with her scream, but it had to be the specific person that she intended to kill with it, and so she tried to kill, it looked like she killed Superman, but what she actually did was she quote-unquote killed Martian Manhunter disguised as Superman because so he was the guest, he made himself look like Superman and then made himself look like a ghost of Superman.
Okay,
so yeah,
I do remember that now. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, it's a fun story. Yeah, she was always a really cool character, and when they did they revealed her backstory, Mike Mignola did the artwork in those that's issues. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, and it, I mean, talk about a perfect person to do that. Yeah. You know, yeah, yeah. She has a great look, and I really like her power. You know, of course, she's kind of ahead of the curve with the whole skull face. You know, mm-hmm. That's so common now, but it's like, and when they did her on Smallville, didn't they?
Yes,
and she looked cool.
Yeah,
I remember like Clark and Lois went to an inn and like Ireland, Scotland, or whatever, and like, yeah, that was a good episode. Yeah. I gotta go back and watch some of those later seasons of Smallville. Yeah. I'm getting the nostalgia vibes for it here lately. a lot of Smallville talk in this episode. Green Lantern puts a ring construct muzzle on her and he recognizes her. So I wonder if she's a Superman villain in this continuity, or, you know, is she just, you know, a utility villain in this continuity?
Yeah.
Like you said, JT, we don't know everything that they've.
Yeah, you almost like what I do, like when that Legion of Doom was first, like we first saw it here in the DCAU, and you see so many of these, you know, filler background characters. But of course, for folks like us who know the comics fairly well, like it's like, oh, okay, that's a Superman villain. When did this happen? Well, obviously, there was still a lot of time that took place between, you know, Legacy and Secret Origins, but then Superman's still having adventures in Metropolis alongside the Justice League episodes. So it's almost like, oh, just part of these untold tales of the DCAU is kind of how I always look at this stuff.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good way to
Rampage
look at it.
Because Rampage is in there and Atomic Skull is in there. And it's like, oh, man, you know, we could have had more more Superman villains, you know.
Yeah. Oh, they should go back and just do another Superman the Animated Series, fill in all the gaps, you know.
I'd be down.
Although I do like My Adventures with Superman. We like that. That's good. Yeah. That's
I have good. Not watched any of that yet. I just haven't gotten around to it. Is it good?
Yeah, we really enjoyed it. It's a different, you know, it's a different take, but it's good. Mm-hmm. And I like their portrayal of Superman. He's just a, you know, a good person. And yeah. I like that. It's
good. So they didn't make him super dark and depressing then.
Oh no, it's a complete opposite of that. Although, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything, but Superman himself.
Okay.
No, I don't want to spoil anything. So, but it's really good. Yeah. Yeah. It's short. It's a short season too. So, you know, yeah, might want to go watch it on Max before they pull it, like a, you know, because you never know what Max is going to do, you know. So
yeah, I agree. It's very weird over there.
Yeah, Deimos' army launches round drones that blow a hole in the mountain, like Deimos and some troops to pass through, and they remind me of Syndrome's droids from The Incredibles, mm-hmm. Omnidroid or whatever they called it. Deimos speaks to his troops tell the outworlders to come get his rock. And so he's not really after this, just the weapons to trade, you know, in trade to conquer Skartaris, right. Which, like I said, I like that. It's like the mystical villain's not after the MacGuffin mystical rock. He's like, these guys want the rock. I just want your guns and your technology, you know?
Well, and considering the world that, you know, these villains are coming from, what that much kryptonite, I mean, they don't even have to use it all for some sort of mega weapon. They could still sell it off. I mean, it's worth so much to them. And like they said, or he says, like, I don't care about the rock.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Better Off Dead when Curtis Armstrong's up on top of the mountain. It's like, do you know what the street value of this is? You know.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Kind of wrong nowadays, but still great. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Stargirl arrives and they have a nice fight. She eventually takes out the high-tech hand blasters he's wearing. He says, my magic is strongest, girl. I do like her retort after disarming
your breath is strongest, dude. That's about it.
Yeah. 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 But Metallo grabs her staff from behind and holds it against her throat. Deimos' line to her is kind of disturbing. He says, such a pretty girl, but then they're always pretty when I begin. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, what's that mean? You know?
Yep. And can we talk about how dumb it is for somebody in the middle of a battle takes their weapon and puts it behind their back and holds it like that.
Yeah.
That makes a cute little pose. Let's put it on the snap.
Yeah.
But literally, Metallo grabs it and grabs her.
Yeah.
And she's screwed.
Yeah.
I mean, that is dumb.
In the middle of a war.
Yeah.
She does this. Yeah.
I mean, she's going to put it on Snapchat.
That's right. Yeah. She's getting ready to get her phone out and take a picture. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know,
I'm sorry, I'm bitter about that.
Because of the Stargirl series and TV series, I'm thinking, well, can't she, and even in the comics, can't she, like, control the staff, even if, you know, like, with her mind? Like,
right.
Like, can't she make it rocket across the room or come out of his hands or something? But, you know, she doesn't, so, yeah.
Not in this reality.
Not in this reality, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they did that in the comics either. I felt like that was for the show.
Yeah, I think that was a little probably more for the show than... You know, I knew Jack Knight could kind of control it when he wasn't holding it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, so it's, you know, because it's Jack's staff, you know, really, but that he gave her. But
right.
I don't know. Yeah. So
they almost gave it a personality in the Stargirl series.
Oh, yeah. It was like its own character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, Morgan interrupts with a good action hero line. Deimos, you and me, pal. Of course, Deimos and his laconic response is even better. Morgan. I was hoping to kill you today. You know.
I'm sorry. This exchange and the ensuing battle is just kind of cringe. I'm sorry.
Why is it cringe?
Because it's just pat, and it's just like, okay, check. Okay, he said the line. Okay, check. Okay, yeah. check. Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can see that. I mean, it is very like. The Justice League got dumped in, like he said, in the 80s, fantasy action movie.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I was just kind of like,
okay. I get it.
I agree with you, Cindy, 100%, but that's just it. Like, it's that type of vibe. So it's like you expect the one-liners, you expect those types of dialogue for this type of thing. Because that's really the only place it ever works are in corny action flicks, you know? And it's like, that's kind of what they were doing there. Maybe not on purpose. You know, maybe it does come across corny, but I like corny. So like, I loved it.
I'm not meaning to, you know.
No, I just, not
know,
at all.
I'm just that's like, okay. Hey, you know, if we all, you know, it makes the conversation more interesting too, you know? So
trust me, my wife rolls her eyes at half of my collection of DVDs for that reason. We watched Big Trouble in Little China, and she said, I'm not allowed to pick movies anymore.
Well, I tell you, my daughter and I had an unexpected day off of school because there was a water main break in our town. She made me watch The Thundermans.
Yeah.
The Disney Plus, because she watched...
Oh, Nickelodeon.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no.
I don't even know what that is.
It was a Nickelodeon sitcom from just a few years ago that was about a family of superheroes, and they did a reunion movie.
Holy
and
crap.
Apparently, even Danny thought it was pretty cheesy, though.
I mean, I could feel my brain leaking out of my ears.
Yeah.
she owes me money, chocolate, a back rub, foot rub, something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that Morgan doesn't seem concerned at all for Stargirl, though. I mean, he leaves her with Metallo choking her.
Uh-huh.
I guess you shouldn't be a rude guest in a strange land. That's I'm like, you're the little brat that threw off on my people. Screw you, you know.
What's interesting about some of the dialogue there between Metallo and Supergirl is you can tell that Metallo knows about Supergirl, but they clearly haven't tussled before. They've never had to go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah.
And see, that's one thing I wonder, because the Dino guy before, he says one of them had this shield, had the, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that it's a female.
Right.
So I wonder if Metallo walked into that thinking he was going to be facing Superman.
Mm. Yeah.
And then probably then underestimated Supergirl because he's like, oh, it's Supergirl. Because, of course, right. He would know about her, you know, with just being in Metropolis and what have you. But it's, again, it's kind of interesting because it's like, okay, well, what's happening, you know, after Legacy? What happened? You know, it's like, it's just kind of neat because it kind of implies, you know, obviously these characters are still living their lives.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too because, you know, she bluffs him that Kryptonite doesn't phase her. So, you know, she's calling mm-hmm. to the animated comics. Of course, yeah. He's not buying yeah. it, aware that she normally wouldn't need to pick up Stargirl's staff.
Right.
You know, but, you know, but I love when, you know, he comes at her and then she just like cleaves the staff into his shoulder.
Yeah.
And as she runs, he rips it off. And it does seem to be quite awesome. Painful for him. Yeah.
It reminded me of like in Rob Roy when he uses his sword and cuts his.
Oh, yeah. Cuts like, Tim yeah. Roth in half. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Woo. Man. But boy, did he deserve it.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. He's such a flying ball.
But it does seem painful to him. And the fact that he ripped off the arm that still looked human.
Yeah.
It still had the skin covering.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. I hadn't thought about
that.
So
he's losing even more of his humanity.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I did notice one thing, speaking of painful, that I forgot to mention. Stargirl, like, does try to get away from him. And she, like, flies him and her both back into the wall. Mm-hmm. And he goes into the wall, but it doesn't hurt him. And he grabs her and then shoves her face into the rock.
Oh, yeah.
Mountain. It's like, how did that? How is her face not pulverized?
Exactly.
Yeah. That?
Stargirl.
Yeah, she's not, unless she keeps some kind of, maybe the belt's the force field belt. I don't know. Maybe it's got a force field around it. I don't know. But
I say that all the time. There's no way Bruce Wayne would have perfect teeth. There's no way Black Canary, with how much of a scrapper she is, wouldn't have a broken nose 15 times, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But this is comics or this is superhero cartoons. You know, everybody still has to look perfect.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Of course, Metallo's chasing Supergirl. She pushes a huge statue on him, but he gets right back up and after her. Meanwhile, Morgan and Deimos are recreating the final battle between Robin and Sir Guy from The Adventures of Robin Hood, climbing backwards up a flight of stone stairs.
Again.
I do say I do like Morgan's move of stepping on Deimos's blade and breaking it off on the step.
That was nice.
That was a nice move. I like that. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, and at sword point, Deimos mocks Morgan's dream of uniting the lands of Skartaris, but he tells him it's the one dream worth fighting for. Morgan drops his sword for some reason, which I never understand that. But it's really just so Deimos can be a weasel and charge at him with Morgan stepping aside. And him falling to his apparent death.
Check, check.
Hitting all the tropes.
Right, right. Just gonna say,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just...
yeah. It, you know, he should have, you know, Morgan should have had a Schwarzenegger-like one-liner when he fell off, mm-hmm. you know, like, have a nice trip or something, you know. Or, yeah. I don't, you know.
The classic commando, you know, like, hey, Bennett, let off some steam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. One of my favorites is in Predator when he throws that knife at that guy, stick around, you know. It's just
right. It's amazing.
We got to see Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of play Mr. Freeze again this week, so that was nice.
Yeah. You know? Man, that just took over the meme verse this week. It's just hilarious.
Oh, I know. It's like, I think that's the best thing come out of the Oscars was, you know, Michael Keaton's like transformation into Batman and sitting in the audience, you know, which I mean, he knew he was going to do it, but still, yeah.
Oh, well, it's like Michael Keaton, make yourself more endearing to us super fans. Oh, there you go. You just did it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can we get that Batman Beyond movie, Warner Brothers?
I know.
Please just do it. I mean, come on.
I mean, you got him there, and he looks like old man Bruce. Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. I mean, they shouldn't even have done the
Alfred L. I mean, have him, you know.
Yeah, he could be. Well, he's too old to be.
Well, yeah, now he is.
Now he is. But, I mean, they could get any of the young, you know, hot young actors to play Terry or something. Yeah, it's just, come on. Oh, but anyway, back to this part of the animated universe.
Yeah.
I like that Supergirl picks up a blaster. She actually hits Metallo, but it doesn't do much good. And he continues to blast her with his kryptonite beam, which you pointed out is now coming from his chest.
I think he's done that in the past as well, but the upgrade he got from Inner Gang was the kryptonite vision.
Yeah.
Which he never uses once here.
Mm-mm.
And then what I was going to say is, when you guys were talking about how he rips the rest of his arm off and he feels that pain, I don't think he should be feeling pain, because that was one of his issues too, was that, you know, he couldn't feel anything.
Mm.
At least the early Metallo appearances.
You're right. Yes.
So it's leading me to believe that this is just a new Metallo body for him. And there's another thing coming up I'll talk about when we get to it. But yeah, those don't quite, I mean, it still works. It just doesn't jive with his original metal body. So I think this is just a new body for him.
Okay. Yeah, you're right, because I remember that was one of the things he talked about. He can't feel or taste anything anymore. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I do like that we see, you know, when he blasts her, like, you really get that, you know, Supergirl's just like she's running, but she's stumbling about.
Mm-hmm.
You get the idea. She's running just on pure willpower at this point. Speaking of which, where the crap are Green Lantern and Stripe?
Yeah,
I mean, the battle looks like it's pretty much over. What are they doing? You know,
they let
Silver Banshee get away.
Yeah.
So I mean, what are they doing right now? Are they like taking a break or something? Or
it's like, come on, Stripe, your scanner vision or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Metallo catches up to Supergirl, telling her he knows she lied and that kryptonite poisoning is starting to affect her. He picks her up and says, "You have none of Superman's strength." But she picks up a dagger on the way up and says,
"But I've got brains."
And pries his kryptonite heart out with the dagger. So Metallo is immobilized, but says while he can't move without his kryptonite battery, it's killing her. She starts to try to work his hand loose with the dagger.
"I won't quit."
But Stargirl arrives and adds, "You won't have to," and uses her beam of her staff and tosses away. And the two smile at each other. So Courtney actually learned something about respect. Yes.
What's up?
Mm. Well, and this was the other thing I was going to say about Metallo's body. That was never a thing for him before. A lot of times he would go running after that kryptonite to put it back into his chest cavity.
Mm.
So this, again, that's why I think this is just a new, you know, similar version of his body, because him becoming just instantly immobilized, that was never a thing before.
So apparently after Flash tossed him with Wonder Woman's lasso, he had to have his body rebuilt, you know.
Yeah, he must have landed in a quarry or something and then dynamite went off. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He just, like everything in a movie or something, he just exploded randomly, you know.
Yeah.
When he landed, he just exploded. Like, he's like a pinto or something, you know, I don't know. then we get the celebratory scene where Morgan declares that the stone is safe and Skartaris is free, standing with Jennifer and Tara, who still doesn't say anything. And Cindy, you want to point out with Tara, what you saw in this scene?
Oh my gosh, all of the underboob. I mean, like, not even underboob, like, the bottom half of her boobs.
Yeah, I mean, she was like one slip away. She was like a nipple slip away from like cancellation. Yeah. Yeah, she really was.
We call those wardrobe malfunctions nowadays.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Yeah, she again, it's so weird that they didn't give her any speaking lines in this. It's really strange. I do think we see when they pan over the crowd, I think maybe the one guy looks like the blonde He-Man barbarian that got taken out by a silver banshee. So maybe Jennifer was able to use her magic to heal him. But there's a guy that looks just like Conan over near him. So he's got the bone necklace and necklace, and
it had to have been done on purpose.
I'm sure they snuck Conan in there. Yeah,
there might even be other ones for all we know. Maybe there is like a Frank Frazetta character in there because he did all those paintings and stuff.
I bet you.
There's probably like, you know, Throngor and King Cole or somebody, or all you know, probably all in there somewhere. Yeah. Maybe Thundar the Barbarian's in there in the background.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I like the bit where Green Lantern is playing interrogator, making Metallo sweat about his power running out, which, as you said, I don't think was a thing before. So
the power running out aspect would happen, but him becoming immobilized or paralyzed, that wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
Because when he was cooling in the, or stuck in that cooled off lava, he was actively trying to remember his name so he didn't get amnesia again. But then you see his green eye start to fade out. So I think that still makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and he's finally about to spill about who he was working with, and then zap. And, you know, he gets shocked. His whole head, like, basically gets electrified and starts smoking as he screams. And it makes you wonder, is he working for Amanda Waller? I would be concerned about that if I was the Justice League. Like, is she back to doing this again? You know, but of course, we know it was Grodd and or Lex, but still, it's a nice mystery for the League. And like we said, I guess Silver Banshee escaped somehow.
I guess.
Because GL says he's taking that thing, as Morgan puts it, with him.
Right.
So he doesn't mention Silver Banshee's going with him. And she's not seen. So she escaped, apparently.
I'm assuming it was a mouse that got inside of Metallo and just started to eat wires.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
But then again, I've been working a lot lately, so maybe maybe that's on me.
Yeah. I'd say you see a lot of that. Yeah.
Yep.
Have you ever seen the episode of Super Friends with Plastic Man where he has to get a mouse?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Professor Goodfellow's geek?
Yes. Yes.
Yep. See, but, you know, Plastic Man's part of the League, apparently. You know, he's been name dropped, you know. He could have got the mouse out of Metallo, and then they could have questioned him.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. Green Lantern says he wants to take the stone, too, but Supergirl wants to leave it there because it's doing some good. But here's my problem. Is it doing good? Because doesn't prolonged exposure to kryptonite just give humans cancer like it did Lex?
These are not humans. These are people that can transform, have magic. They are not necessarily Homo sapiens.
Except for Travis Morgan, then. Except so maybe Travis. He's the
right. I mean, he would be the exception, but the rest the of the populace, the
Mariah, I guess. Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's a good point. Yeah. I mean, that's a big chunk of kryptonite. But then again, it is kept behind, you know, those doors, and you know, there could be once magic's involved, then you can. It's like, oh, magic made sure nobody got hurt from it.
Yeah.
I do like in this scene that Courtney is dressing Kara's arm during all this. So that's a nice touch. Yeah. So Green Lantern seals the portal, and Stargirl asks Kara if she needs a lift, but she's back to full power. And Pat tells Courtney to slow her butt down. And she groans about her stepdad. And then Kara brings up being stuck on the farm for 3 years because of Superman. But does that jive with continuity? Because I don't think she was on the farm longer than just maybe a few weeks or months before she debuted as Supergirl, it seemed like. I mean, I don't think it was three years.
She debuted as Supergirl, but it wasn't supposed to happen. And I don't think Superman let her really keep going with that, because we see her again in Unity.
Yeah.
The Superman animated series episode where it's all just in Smallville on the farm.
Yeah.
And she's just as Kara. And then originally with the whole legacy thing, she was just secretly operating Superman robots from the fortress.
That's right. You're right.
So she wasn't really supposed to be very public. I'm sure she got out every once in a while, but it really wasn't until really initiation where we at least see her full on. It's like, okay, I'm Supergirl and let's do this now. So
that's a good point. Yep. I think
you're
right.
I can't remember if it was in a comic, in a Justice League comic book I read, or if it was on one of the shows somewhere where she teams up with Batgirl, and it's like she's not known.
It's the episode Girls Night Out.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
There was that bat. Yeah, that's true. So yeah, she was out there.
I'm sorry, I couldn't remember if I had read it or if I had seen it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That's where they fight Poison Ivy and Harley and Livewire.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Livewire goes to Gotham, I think, is what happens.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good episode. Yep.
But it also points to the fact that Supergirl isn't really a known quantity.
Yeah,
so much.
That's true.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm curious about is how much public interaction did she have in that episode? I'll have to rewatch that one. I got to watch more DCAU.
And that also explains why in the Justice League episode, while the Christmas episode, Comfort and Joy, Kara is off with Barbara skiing and not at home at Christmas. Mm-hmm. So because they're friends because of that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, man, I wish they could have used the Bat characters on here. It still bothers. I know.
That embargo is so dumb. That and the Aquaman one, too. Like,
yeah,
it never makes sense to me. It's all still Warner Brothers. Like, why can't you use these things?
Yeah, and I mean, I almost get the Batman one more than the Aquaman one because it's like we're developing a live-action Aquaman series. It's like going to have none of these characters, and he's not going to look anything like this.
Right.
It's like, so we got to make Devil Ray instead of Black Manta, and Aquaman suddenly not in the Justice League anymore. It's just like, okay, whatever, you know. and we get to that next episode, actually, so yeah.
Yep.
So the League flies back home as they ponder just what Metallo's and Silver Banshee's involvement meant. We close in on that green eye of Metallo. So nice setup to continue the rest of the season. So, okay, if you guys are ready, we'll jump into our superlatives.
Power action feature.
Okay, for power action feature, what did you have, JT?
Maybe this is a bit of a cop-out. There's tons of awesome action bits in this episode, but I got to go with just anything Stripe did.
Okay, that's cool.
I imagine power action feature. Did you guys derive that from just classic action figure stuff?
Yeah, like superpowers figures. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So like this, just all the stuff he did was everything I would love my JLU Stripe figure to do. And he just stands there. But, you know. The scanner vision, the rocket fists, all of his, I don't know. I loved all of it. I thought it was cool to see him do all that awesome stuff, fighting dinosaurs. It was just fun.
Yeah. It was all really cool. What about you, Cindy?
When Supergirl jumps off the top of the fort with a sword.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I actually picked, the Kapow, like the moment where Supergirl pries the kryptonite heart out of Metallo. I thought that was a nice, that's just, both of them show how, her never say die, attitude, which I think's just really, they put across really well.
Rotating chairperson.
So who did we have for rotating chairperson, JT?
I have to give it to Supergirl.
Same.
Yeah, me too.
she has just full, it's just, again, talking about story arcs and character arcs, with the DCAU, just seeing her progress just in JLU alone, this is the episode where she's just feels like she's her own superhero. Nothing like a superhero in training or anything like that. Like, she's just, I'm Supergirl now. I don't know. The fact that she flung herself into battle with barely any powers, that tells so much about who she is.
And, tenacious.
Yeah. Yes. And willing, again, Superman's speech and initiation, how, he's like, we're all willing to make the ultimate, sacrifice or whatever. I mean, there you go. There's Supergirl without powers going after a bunch of, like, ogres with swords. I mean, hell yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about it. I mean, I probably didn't put it down. But, if you think about the last time we saw Supergirl in the Cadmus arc, she defeated Galatea. Mm-hmm. So she defeated this older you know, twisted version of herself.
Right.
So that kind of, you know, like I think that probably just gave her that much more of a confidence boost and matured her in a lot of ways.
I was just going to say, fighting evil clones of yourself, you have to grow up a little bit, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Be a little self-reflective and move forward. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Justice League Communicator.
So for Justice League Communicator, what was your favorite line this episode?
For me, I have to go with the thing Cindy did not like, which is definitely the back and forth with Morgan and Demos.
Demos!
You and me, pal.
Morgan, I was hoping to kill you today. You think you've won? No, freedom-loving warlord will ever unite the lands and bring peace. Justice. A foolish dream.
Maybe so, wizard. But it's the one dream worth fighting for.
Put me in my 80s action movie frame of mind, and that's always my happy place I go to. So,
yeah, those are really good. And what was your favorite line, Cindy?
Honestly, you and I actually agree because I'm looking at your notes.
Oh, okay.
But when Warlord puts Stargirl in her place.
Oh, yeah, for dumping on his people.
Yeah.
Sick burn.
That's a great one.
I mean, well, I'm sorry. I guess it's because where I'm an educator, there is nothing like putting some little snotty 10, 11-year-old in their place and just being completely calm about it. And they're just like, oh, my gosh, you just obliterated me. There's something satisfying about that. I'm sorry, but there is.
It's good to have a career that allows you those rewarding, you know, moments. So that's good.
Yeah.
Jeez, you call that an army?
Most of these folks have lost everything to Demos. So, you know, feel free to dump on them.
What I meant was, she means we'll do everything we can to help.
With love, though.
That's right. You got to teach them. That's a lesson you got to teach them, too, you know?
Well, like, I had a kid actually say this, and you'll have to excuse the language, but he had a potty mouth. He's like, Miss Franklin, he was telling this to a new kid. He said, Miss Franklin loves us, but she takes no shit. I'm like, yeah.
But then you got on him for saying shit, right?
It was pointless. Okay. That was the least of my worries.
Okay.
That was the least word that he said.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay.
Comic connections.
So for comic connections, I think we can all just agree that there's a whole lot of Warlord in this episode. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, we have literally entered the lost world of the Warlord in this episode. So, I hope Mike Grell got some compensation out of this. I don't know if he...
I do too.
I think when he came in, I don't know. He was probably right on the bubble of, cause he came in right before Jeanette Kahn, you know, but because she brought it back, hopefully she grandfathered him in for
participation. Well, he was part of it for 130 plus issues right up into the late '80s. So hopefully something got restructured maybe for him.
Yeah.
Well, and you can tell with how this episode goes, you know, we're introduced to it. We see various interesting looking characters that clearly are meant to be main characters, but we don't even get speaking roles for them. And then it ends with, I got everything I need right here. It's sealed up. I don't think if the creators of the show were to have gotten more episodes, I don't think we would have ever returned here.
No.
So I think this really is probably even them saying, go read the comics. You want to know more about this? You know, we highlighted a little bit, but there you go. I think, I think that's kind of what the idea was.
Yeah, good point.
Electricity is evil.
For electricity is evil, you probably had a couple that jumped out at you, JT.
The main one's got to be the Metallo Brain Fry.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be it.
Yeah, it's not really evil, but like he's pointed out, but when Stripe shocks that dinosaur that bites his head, I think that's just hilarious. It's just cold, you know, just jump.
Well, I'm going for this, that electricity's awesome.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, there's all these things that Stripe is using his power, you know, that's the point that you're seeing. Electricity's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not evil. Supergirl doesn't get fried by a... electrified grate, you know, which we got to bring up every time. Yeah.
You guys got to make that a t-shirt or something.
Oh, I know. We really should.
The electrified great.
Yeah, just have a silhouette of a superhero getting, you know, yeah. a sound effect. Oh, you know, to, you know, yeah. yeah. We really should. We should put that. Yeah.
It's like, caution, greats are electrified.
Yeah. So, final thoughts on this one, JT.
It's hard for me to. This is why I can never do like a traditional review show of any sort with JLU, because I really do love all these episodes. I love this one as well. What was so great about JLU in general, but certainly the third season, is, you know, obviously they thought that they weren't going to get any more. They're like, hey, why don't you come back for another 13? And, you know, they have said, it's like, well, okay, what do we do? Because we felt like we buttoned everything up. And the idea where it's like, let's throw a bunch of stuff at everybody. You know, DC has so much stuff. Let's take a bunch of that for our 13 episodes, while also still giving them more of these characters that not only we've already established, but, you know, the JLU has so many background characters, and to keep getting them slowly but surely, you know, some spotlight here is just why this show was so much fun. I mean, you're any sort of a comic book fan, a DC fan, to see the love that these characters start getting in these spotlights. I feel like this show probably helped put Stargirl more in people's, you know, living rooms, sure, certainly, but then thinking, hey, maybe there's more to Stargirl we could do, because, you know, she then showed up in Justice League Action, and, you know, wasn't she in that Smallville episode with the JSA? Mm-hmm. And I know Geoff Johns created her and what have you, but she's one of my favorite, you know, the two of them. I love their back and forth as, you know, stepdad and stepdaughter. Like, it's a cool dynamic for superheroes to see that. Mm-hmm. So that was cool to see in here. And just, again, it's just fun seeing random stuff from the DC universe, you know, get utilized. And this was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I mean, I kind of like, it's one of those things that you get to see the parallels between, you know, the relationship that Stripe has with Courtney versus the relationship that Green Lantern has with Supergirl. Mm-hmm. And you get to see the point, you know, that, you know, Stargirl is where Supergirl was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You get to see that, and you're seeing that evolution.
Yeah.
As far as, I'm sorry. It was just that last 5 minutes of the episode, and I'm just like, oh. And I know that's your favorite part. I'm so sorry, but it's just, for me, I was just like, oh. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You don't have to apologize. It's not. I think it really just turned into like a guy movie at that point. You know, it makes, you know, it's kind of how it makes sense. It's not for, I can't imagine it's for everybody. Like I said, I actively made fun of Warlord comics for a long time before I realized, oh wait, this is kind of cool.
You know, for me, the first time I rewatched this episode, I wasn't real crazy about it, I'll be honest with you. I felt like it was kind of like, oh, they've crammed too much stuff and tried to cram too much into one episode. But after I rewatched it, I kind of got into, okay, they're really, like you said, they're kind of like, it's kind of like they're playing with the Warlord toy line. Plus they're like, here's Dino Riders. They're literally throwing all this cool stuff. They're throwing the Justice League in the middle of a giant toy box. It's almost like that one of the Toy Story shorts they did with the Dino characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Christmas one.
That
they
was that Toy Story Time Forgot.
Yeah, yes, it's kind of like that. You know, it's kind of like that. And when I looked at it from that perspective, I'm like, you know, this is pretty fun. I mean, it's literally like if I had my, you know, superpowers figures, and I put them with my war or my Migos, and I put them with my Warlord or He-Man figures. And I also had some dinosaurs and things, and just threw them all together and had a cool playtime. You know, it works on that level. Plus you get, like you said, the character development with our main Justice Leaguers and a spotlight for Stargirl and Stripe that we haven't seen a lot of. So I ended up liking this one a lot more. The second go around when I was doing the notes, I mean, I obviously seen it before, but I hadn't seen it in a long time because this isn't one I revisit a lot, but it's fun. And it's, you know, it at the end of the day, probably if they were going to do a Warlord, they did the absolute best they could in 22 minutes and still service the main characters. So yeah, I think it worked out pretty good. So
Well, and think about it too, like the original two seasons of Justice League. I know you guys have talked about it, but I mean, it's, you know, some of that stuff felt maybe that they stretched stories to fill mm-hmm. two episodes.
Yeah.
And maybe even doing a Warlord two-parter then might have felt like, okay, this is too much Warlord. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. It almost fits better where it's like the one episode, it's like, here's a bunch of crazy stuff. Here's a little section of this DC universe that, you know, we got to have this crazy adventure on, you know, and then we're on to the next thing. And again, I think Justice League Unlimited is just such a perfect show for that, because then you don't get stuck too long on something that maybe, you know, doesn't need that much time.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Well, JT, thanks so much for helping us cover this episode. Where can folks find you on the socials? And you got any other podcast guest spots coming up?
Not as of right now. I pretty much just sit around, you know, next to a rainy window looking out, wondering when Shag's going to get a hold of me for his next thing, his next idea. But I do, aside from the random stuff on Fire and Water, I have a semi-regular on appearances on the Epic Marvel podcast. Curtis Finley runs that, and basically we go through the Marvel Epic collections, which are the bigger trade paperbacks that they've been doing for the past, I don't know, probably 10 years now. I'm on specifically the episodes talking about West Coast Avengers and the Tomb of Dracula classic series. So those are the two I'm on over there. And I'm always telling him, hey, you know, I want to make sure that I'm your guy with Hawkeye, or I'm your guy with Ghost Rider, because I could just talk about comics all the time. So
Nice. Well, I'm definitely gonna have to check that out, because I'm a big Tomb of Dracula fan. So I'm gonna definitely check that out. Thanks for letting me know. And everybody check that out. Also, we should point out our friends Darren and Ruth Sutherland do a Warlord Worlds podcast about all of Mike Grell's comics.
Okay.
And they are actually friends with Mike Grell, so they know what they're talking about.
That's awesome.
So definitely check that show out as well. You know, we want to give a special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capoon, Rocket Dan Johnson, and Chuck Carvalho, who specifically support JLUcast. You think the guys could maybe help us set up an old folks home in Scarteris for all those warriors Silver Banshee decimated?
Well, let's hope that Jennifer was able to heal them.
Yeah, let's hope so. But special thanks to all our Patreon supporters for information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Visit patreon.com/FWPodcast and be here next time when we have perhaps the strangest team up of all, when the Justice League meets the Viking Prince.
Mm-hmm.
See you then. Bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide, and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FWPodcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
What's with all the wannabes?
Probably here for the convention.
Convention?
If we get back to the Metro Tower, you and I are going to have a talk about grandstanding.
Tell that to her. The little show-off stole my thunder. Ow! Don't you talk about Supergirl! Supergirl can melt you with her eyes! Big whoop. My stepdad here is a mecha.
Mecha soul last year.
She's very big in Japan.